Fisher. Supervisor Nordigan.
Present.
Supervisor Stock.
Present.
Belsky.
She is excused.
Okay. Supervisor Carroll.
Here.
Supervisor O'Day.
Here.
Supervisor Stocker.
Here.
Supervisor Thomas.
Here.
Jake Thomas from Youth and Governance is excused. Evie Hernandez is here. Thank you. Any citizens' comments? Any citizens' comments? Seeing no citizens, there are no citizens' comments. We'll move on to approval minutes from the previous meetings. September minutes and October minutes were sent out. Anybody have any changes that they thought needed to be made?
Motion approved.
Second.
Motion approved. Second. Any further discussion? The Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Rest of the committee?
Aye.
Minutes are passed. Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything present. I think most of my stuff's going to fall underneath Director Billingsley's final words for the day, because there's a couple things we have to look at. There's one thing for sure we have to look at for next month. But other than that, any supervisor comments? Otherwise, you're going to wait until they come up in the table. Sounds good. Okay, we're going to start off here with a resolution by Supervisor Skirtson and Billy also on this resolution too.
Yeah.
And, Supervisor Brady. I will let them do the presentation of the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you to Supervisor Grady for co-sponsoring this resolution with me. And I got, you mind if I get the door?
We can ask them to be quiet.
Close their door.
I was notified by the executive that there's going to be a meeting at the village, so I contacted the village. They had a meeting on August 3rd with the Department of Transportation. And the DOT came to that meeting, and I met with the chairman, George Stoner, and he let me sit right up in the front next to him, and he got this presentation from Department of Transportation where they're talking about renovating Sheridan Road from Alfred Park on the south end. And I have maps in my phone, I can send those later. Alfred Park on the south end to 21st and Racine on the north end, and they had three options. One option was to redesign it with as it was. Another option was to put a turn it into a two-lane road, which this is actually the recommended option, and they're pushing this one pretty hard from when I talked to the people at the village. And then there's a third option that seems to not be getting any traction. So it's really the two options. And so I met with the village, and they're very concerned about it. They expressed their concern to the Department of Transportation. And talking to our professionals here at the county, it was a little surprising because, and I've been at these meetings in the past over the last 30, 40 years, I've been to some of these meetings. And generally what I saw the DOT do is they would come in and talk to you about a road, and they would want to learn what would the community like. In this case, what they're doing is they're telling us what they would like. They're recommending that they do this version where they're cutting from four lanes to two lanes, and then in some parts putting in a middle, what do you call that, a trundle lane, or what do you call it? A twiddle lane.
Twiddle.
Yeah. So, the village, working with the village, and I communicated with all of our all of the professionals here at the county, the village really would not would like to stay. They would like the profile of the road to stay as it is now, the four lanes. And you know, I've been living in that area almost my whole life, and I may have driven that road more than anyone on earth, and even in the region. I mean, I worked at the county for 30 years. I took the road every day. I think the first time I was on the road was maybe when I was 4 or 5 years old and my dad would take me down to Illinois to buy Ole. Did anyone remember the days of buying Ole?
Sure.
And then they would take me to there was a outdoor movie theater there. We'd go to that outdoor movie theater. I'm talking to Supervisor O'Day. He was on that road, had a very unfortunate circumstance when they had that middle lane. They called it something different back in your day. They didn't call it a middle lane.
It's a suicide lane.
When I went to this hearing and I'm listening to the village professionals, you've got their public safety guys and you have their public works guys talking about how it's going to make their job harder. And one of the things they want to do is they want to put bike lanes in, they want to put walking paths in.
Multi-use trail. Multi-use lanes?
Well, I think they're multi-use, but I don't know if some are just dedicated. I think they are multi-use, yeah. But so I'm talking to the professionals, and they're saying at the village, and they're saying, you know, why would we if that would reduce the safety of that road if you have people driving there at the speeds they drive, and now you're introducing more bikes and more pedestrians. I worked with the village. Supervisor Grady knew about this too. You went to some of the meetings, right, Bill?
I did. I'm going to have you finish your comments and I'll add some.
Yeah. And so Bill went to some of the meetings. He'll talk too on this. So the reason they say they're doing this is for safety. The professionals at the village are saying that most of the incidents that occurred were from impaired either pedestrians or drivers. It wasn't because of the design of the road. It was because of the people that had the unfortunate incident were impaired. So, and when you look at the fact that, a few decades ago, the DOT recommended that, actually did rebuild this and thought that it would be best to leave it four lanes, and now we have more traffic and we're going to cut it down to two lanes. And I know the county has invested, I saw almost 50 million invested on 142, and tens of millions invested in other roads to expand lane miles, and why would we want to reduce lane miles now? Those are some of my observation as a supervisor from the 15th, which has most of this road in it. I support the village in this case. The timing of this is the plans are expected to be completed by 2026 and construction is possibly 2027. So we have a little time to go on this thing. And with that, if it's okay, I would turn it over to Supervisor Grady.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just start with a little bit different tack, and that is I'm not overly familiar with DOT like some people, unless you're Mark Clement especially, but I do know that they make a concerted effort to, in most cases, hear out the public, to give opportunity for comment and so forth. It's my impression that the one meeting where there was open discussion on this occurred, we can look this up, I believe it was in 2021. Was at Carthage College. I was present for that. And there was a turnout of maybe 40, 50 people, something like that. And it would seem that, just from my perspective, they really weren't open to knowing what the input was. They were saying, this is what our plan is, this is what we've got going on. And I think a few people were for it. I myself said, no, I don't think this is a good idea. We should have further review once the next meeting session. I said, well, there is no meeting session. You don't have anything planned for this. So lo and behold, a year and a half goes by, whatever. Now the next go around for DOT is, well, we're going to have this informational session. And I think it was at public libraries, is that correct,
yeah,
David?
Yeah.
So Northside Library.
Northside Library.
One. I don't know if any of the libraries said. And you just put the thing in place. No DOT, no comment, no anything. This is just what we got planned. So in terms of involvement with a project of this scope, which is enormous, and here you've got this, how many traffic count we could do this, you may have it on record, to take this and take from two trail lanes each direction down to one, it's like, are you kidding me? This is a big deal. And I truly appreciate the Village of Summers and their concerns for this, I think it's not appropriate to not have more delving into the whole process and comment. And I think that suffices for the time.
Supervisor Thomas?
I just had a question, maybe over here, whoever can answer it. Is KR still projected to go four lanes from where it sort of ends now at Green Bay Road all the way to Sheridan? Wasn't that the original plan for Foxconn when they did all that? Anybody know?
Yes, it was discussed, but it was not finalized.
Yeah, so that's still on the table somewhere?
No, what is on the table right now is the county and the state. The Kenosha County, Racine County, and the state are working on a jurisdictional transfer option, okay, which will allow the states to take the entire thing to the entire KR all the way to 32, and they'll swap it with other appropriate state highways.
Do you think they'll revisit that with Microsoft now coming in?
I don't think, yes, it's a good thought, but based on the few information and contacts I've had with the department, they are not looking at the Microsoft to extend the four lanes.
Okay, that would not be
a justification.
Yeah, okay. So does this go like back to Highway 11 and to Racine then as well?
It goes up to 21st. It goes north
to Mount Pleasant then.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is where the old Case plant building
is. Yeah, it goes north of that old Case plant.
Yeah, so is that all going to become, that's all going to become residential,
right? No,
it's
going to go back two lanes there, if I understand the plan they've got.
Okay, but isn't that all supposed to be residential development there where the old Case plant is?
I think so. I mean, I drive by there a lot, and they have fences up there. They have trees along the fence, and I remember reading something about a developer buying that, but I.
And that's all. So that's all single-family homes or multi-family homes. If they're working in Kenosha, you're going to come by, and then we're addressing a topic on this development that's going to go around Summers Elementary, which is right on E, which dead ends into 32, which I would think would add more traffic as well. That's supposed to be 416 units based on old information. I don't know how in the world they can. Say, two lanes is a good choice. And then wasn't there supposed to be an apartment complex that was going right on Lake Michigan, right off of Sheridan Road a couple years ago? I don't know if it stalled because of the inflation cost, but that was supposed to be like a 60 unit. Am I remembering that correctly?
There was some kind of development there.
Yeah, and there was like 5 or 6 acres or whatever it was. It was going to be, I think, off A or something like that. All the same, it doesn't make any sense at all to make it two lanes or 1.5 lanes each way or whatever they're thinking.
Supervisor Stocker?
Anytime you bring two lanes into one, there's going to be a traffic jam. And right now it's up in Racine. All this is going to do is bring that jam down into Kenosha County. And I'm not really excited about this idea.
Supervisor Stocker?
Thank you. I did go ahead. I found the document from Wisconsin DOT, so I did just email that to everybody. So I'm looking through here. It actually shows cutaway of the proposals. Personally, I would agree with the authors of the resolution that I don't think this is good for that area. Having driven that, just forever, I know that's a bus route. I know there's a bus route that goes up and down that corridor. Do you know, either Agree or Supervisor Gersten, is it literally just going to be sidewalks, or are they doing like an off multi-use ring? Because what I'm seeing here just looks like a sidewalk.
Sidewalks.
It is a sidewalk.
It's a sidewalk. I did get some information. I do have snapshots of their presentation, and so taking it right from the presentation, it's reducing two lane. Reducing two lanes would impede. Here it says a sidewalk on the west side from 15th to A, and on-road bicycle accommodations on both sides from Elford to Durand. That's what I was looking for. So, a sidewalk on the east side from Carthage to A. Yeah, so that's what that's what the DOT presented.
Okay. I mean, I have always been in favor of, you know, safer bike routes for people that are biking. I personally have biked this route dozens of times. I like taking the off-road bike route at Long Arch Harbor, take the trails all the way through Carthage. At the part where this is supposed to start, right at that intersection where you go into Carthage, the signaled intersection where you go into Carthage, I will run that route up to E and then head west where we have paved multi-use trails all the way into Parkside, and then you can jump on that and we have paved trails going up into Racine from there. So it is a very nice route. Seeing that they're not proposing putting an off-road multi-use trail, I don't think it's any more safe or any more beneficial to bring the cars down to one lane and have a quote-unquote bike lane, because I think it's going to cause more problems than anything. I haven't felt unsafe biking on the right lane. They have signs up currently that says bikes may use full lane, and the motorists, my experience, the motorists respect that. If they see you coming, they get over in the left lane, pass you, and then they get back over. Just because of all the homes on that street where people are going to be turning in and out of their driveway, bringing everything down to one lane is really going to cause congestion. So, just personally, from someone that's biked a portion of this section that they're talking about, I don't feel it would make me safer by doing that. It doesn't. We're not. Safer would be an off-road bike trail, and that's not what they're proposing. And I would think it would cause a lot of confusion with motorists, you know, turning in it, because that whole corridor is all people's driveways and homes all the way down. So the people that are going to be turning off are going to get in that right lane, slow down, and then traffic can keep going by them. You're not causing a backup. But do you know, would they have parking on Sheridan then? If they're like what they do on 39th Avenue and what they do on 85th and Park, right?
In the presentation I saw, I didn't see any discussion of parking. So in the slides, I didn't see any discussion.
Okay, so they wouldn't be like, because currently you can't park on Sheridan. It doesn't sound like that's something that's being presented. That would be a benefit, but I don't even see where that's being proposed. Just from my experience, I don't think adding bike lane this would be safer. Is there a particular reason why they are proposing this? Does anyone know?
It was safety. They said what they told me in the presentation. I was, it's okay. Is this okay, Mr. Chairman, if I answer the question? They said safety, and then the response about the safety was what the village said, that it really wasn't road design, but it was that there were impaired people that were involved in most of the incidents that the DOT had cited.
Okay. And one thing I'll add too, in Pleasant Prairie, where they have this set up, 80th Street, 85th Street, they have one lane, bike lane, parking. They have a problem with whenever someone stops and slows down to turn, the cars that are coming up behind will just go around. Right, they'll cut over that bike lane. They may not be looking for bike motors coming, so they're causing an issue where traffic backs up. They start funneling around it, and in certain portions, I believe 60th Avenue and 85th, they actually put up cones in the middle of the road to stop people from doing that, because that creates a safety hazard when that happens. So, hopefully they will take this resolution into consideration. But I would definitely support what you guys are doing here. So,
thank you,
Supervisor Beck.
Bill Grady, did you say there was a meeting Tuesday at Summers?
Yes, I put it out to County Board Supervisors this afternoon. It is Tuesday, December 5th, 10 a.m., Summers Village Hall. I spoke with Mr. Stoner, and I indicated to him, you know, this is really kind of your show, George, and I'm not going to get involved with the invitation. He said, no, by all means, any interested party who has concerns about this should be in the building. DOT will be there, so everyone is invited to attend.
Not to put either Hammond or Shelley on the spot, do you agree with the state?
With the state?
With the state, saying this needs to reduce the two to increase the safety.
No. Again, I've not really run the numbers or see how they're getting that, but it's a little bit challenging to see that 15 years ago, four lanes were adequate. You needed four lanes to accommodate traffic, and then 15 years later, when traffic is going up, you're downsizing. So it doesn't look right to me. I don't know. The other thing, too, is they are failing to understand the impacts it's going to create for operations. Supervisor Stock just explained. Once you have one lane, it means people get, if someone is making a left turn, they have to wait. And if you have to wait, it creates anxiety, it creates frustration, and people, and that's when people make very hasty decisions, and it's usually sometimes very dangerous. Again, I think the approach I would recommend is that we should work with the state. The state usually is supposed to be constructing these projects with the community. Apparently, the approach they're using here, they're not really constructing with the community. So I think the approach that we should take is we should let the state understand that, okay, this is what we prefer. Why don't you design to meet our requirement and at the same time still provide your off-street pedestrian pathway? I think that's the approach that I would recommend we take, because sometimes if you use what their philosophy and their policy is and present it to them, then they tend to think more. If you just say this is what you want, to them it looks like you're butting heads to each other. So you should say, okay, we prefer leaving it four lanes, but still provide your sidewalk as you want, which would require right of way, which you don't want. Or they just leave it the way it is.
And then, although this isn't our road, you can probably answer this. The state doesn't clear off sidewalks, do they, in the winter?
No.
So pedestrians and bicyclists would still be on the road if they need to be out there in the winter.
Yeah.
Well, so this doesn't resolve that issue. Yeah. It doesn't resolve the bicycle issue either. Bicycles are now going to be on a two-lane road rather than a four-lane road. Correct.
Yeah, generally, with sidewalk, once it is constructed, it becomes the responsibility of the local municipality. Yeah. Because the local municipality have an ordinance that you have to clean your sidewalk within a certain time. Otherwise, yes, you could be fined for that.
And I've rarely ever gone up there. Is there sidewalks out there now?
No.
Nothing out there now. Okay. Has everyone read the resolution? On the committee. I do agree with Clements. A lot of people work with them and against them. I guess I'd be looking for anyone who wants to put forth the resolution.
I'll make a motion.
Moved by Supervisor Stock.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Stock. Yes. Is there any further discussion? I think I just want to, with the caveat that we want to work, not us, this is basically Summers. We really want to promote Summers to work with the state. If they need a little bit of input or whatever we might be able to help out with, we will. But again, it's a state road and it's in Summers, so I don't think there's a whole lot we can do with the fact that we would support Summers' position of keeping this at least as a four-lane length.
That's correct.
Anyone else want to bring anything up? Well, we will ask our youth and governance to vote on the resolution to keep the road basically as it is and not reduce it to two lanes.
Aye.
Okay. The rest of the committee, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution passes unanimously. Thank you, Supervisor. Thank you, Supervisor. Thank you, Supervisor. Okay. We will then bring it up to the first. Division report, the facilities, Frank. Division report, has everyone had a chance to review Frank's report? Frank, is there anything new or changed?
Chris has been wonderful with all of the budget things. I eliminated one generator. We had a generator separately for the radio tower, one for the building. Through some looking at it holistically, realized we could eliminate that one generator and run the feeds out there and have lower the overall cost and lower the cost for the any maintenance and stuff. But that extra $100,000 for that generator can go into that budget, so we're actually under budget as the overall. So instead of $390,000, we have $490,000 in the budget. So that's it. There was a minor change for the KCC budget. That's probably a big change.
And then, so there was one for the building and one for the tower, correct?
There was a separate one for the tower.
Separate for the tower.
We're going to have one. You'll actually be able to see it when we get it. It'll be right out here, and it'll power both the building and the tower, eliminating the extra generator, the cost, the maintenance. And it'll be actually a more reliable feed to the tower.
Okay. And there was some different feeds that we had, regular feeds on.
Correct.
Clean that up too?
Actually, the sub-distribution station is here, south and north. And the feed coming into the building is more stable because if a branch or a tree falls down north of here, the reclosures are after the feed that feeds the building, but before the feed that feeds the radio tower. So if anything happened to the north here, we would have power to the building, but not power to the radio tower, which would have to kick on the generator by actually having everything fed through the building, through this generator. It'll be less of a chance that we lose power and have to rely on the generator. It's a win-win-win.
I'm sorry, what was the approximate value that we would be saving dollar-wise?
It's about $100,000.
Anybody have any questions for the park? Supervisor Stock,
Can you elaborate any further on the courthouse murals? Where are we at with that? I'm having a hard time understanding it. Have we had one restored already? Or did we just get the evaluation? We still have to restore them now.
Excellent question. So with this project and with the grant, what we were able to do is fully restore one complete mural. There's three of them. There's one above the ceremonial courtroom entrance. There's one across the atrium. And then there's one in the stairwell. So with this amount of money, we were able to completely restore the one above the ceremonial courtroom and get the detailed analysis of the other two of them. We were literally just waiting for the final report where they'd taken the samples of all the different colors and all the different paints and the coverings on it and sent them off to a laboratory to get them all back, you know, exactly the makeup, the chemistry, things like that. So we have all that now. So the one full mural is completely restored. The other two, we have the full analysis, including where they're actually delaminating, because that was a big problem with the other one. So we have all that information, and we're going to go out and apply for more grants.
What was the cost? The total cost was up to $20,000 to restore the one? How much was it just for the restoration of the large one?
I have to go back and check just for that cost. We actually had it together as a whole package.
Okay.
We wanted to restore as much as we could, but we had a limited amount of funds. So with that funds, we were able to get one full restored and then the other two analyzed. I have to go back and look at the breakdown.
If you could email us before and after Vic, so we can see those.
Sure, absolutely.
Are you bringing this up in your, I was asking about.
We're going to work on, yes.
Okay. Yeah. You're going to bring that up? Okay.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Supervisor Thomas.
Yeah. Whoever can answer this one. On the on your report, it talks about the exterior building renovation. It had a project budget of $102,000. It went out for a rebid and it came back, and it looks like we're going to have a balance of like $55,000,
$66,000
on this.
Is that which one?
I think that's on my report.
That's on Matt's report.
Oh, my mistake. It always confused me when I see facilities and which facility it is. All right. I'll save it then.
You can wait then on that?
No worries.
Probably just one follow-up. The pictures we'll have before and after, the colors and stuff, they cleaned it up, but it's not like a wow, you know. But the big thing is, and I'll include it, is the actual... He actually puts on there the areas that were delaminating, that were coming loose, and you'll see it was pretty significant. And he actually brought an extra help and actually unrolled it from the top, because if there's smaller areas, what he suspected, they'll actually make an incision between like two different colors. They come together, they'll make an incision and actually inject glue in there and then work it around. What they found was there was so much delamination, it it just, to make all of these incisions all over the place was going to be counterproductive. So he actually was able to unroll it from the top and then literally re-glue it all the way up and put it up there instead of making all of these incisions through the hole. Wow. It was pretty amazing. Like I said, he brought an extra help to do it. Actually, I've got some pictures of that too.
Yeah, I'm just out of curiosity. It'd be cool to see it.
After 100 years, it needed. Yeah. So, literally.
We all do after 100
years. Yeah, after 100 years.
You rolled, unrolled and rolled back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that, Sean? After 100 years.
What are you asking, John?
we're both close, you know, so we're in the same boat, you know. So.
Any other questions for Frank? Go ahead, Aaron.
The KCC redevelopment project, I see 40% complete on the design. What's the projected time frame for completion of the design and then starting the work? I see final completion is Q4 2024. I assume that's the construction work, or is that just the design?
Actually, let me back up for a second. The generator, the lead time for the generator went out so long. So we got the bids back for the generator. Thankfully, they were in budget. And we're doing the submittals, so it's going to be the lead time from order to getting the generator is a year. So we'll have the generator about this time next year. Part of that renovation, restoration, is for the backup dispatch 911 center. We can't really do that because the current generator is maxed out until we get the new generator in place. So. Okay. And there's a couple, they're still looking at that backup dispatch center and with Racine and things like that. So that's why that's kind of a little on hold. So it's kind of, we have both the generator we have to wait for, and then they're still trying to work out what between, they may have Racine use this as a backup. They're still kind of looking at that. So we kind of put that on hold because we had the time before the generator came. And we've been actually, because we've been working so hard and so diligently on all of the details of the new human services center, it kind of worked out. And we're focusing on that, getting those designs finalized and those bids.
Sure. Yeah, that's a lot of work on that one. So this one's kind of on the back burner, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, see no more questions. Thank you, Frank. And we will move on to highways. So we have a couple of resolutions.
Yes.
Go through. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, so the first, we have about two resolutions. The first one is resolution authorizing the acceptance of funds from the Somerville Development for Right-of-Way Acquisition and Highway Improvement. So, in the past, we have traditionally been collaborating with all developments if highway improvements are needed to collect the funds, especially if right-of-way acquisition is also involved. We collaborate with the developer and collect the funds and then carry out the project as if it's a county project. That way, if there's right-of-way, we have the authority to condemn and things like that to facilitate the project. So this is just one of those projects. And I know we have just slightly north of a 1.4 million that we'll be collecting. Again, that number is just an estimate, just as a placeholder. The project will be fully funded by the developer. If the prices, they go up, the developer will pay that. And if it goes down, then the developer has some savings. So they will just be there as the, all we are donating is our man hour, staff time. So I just want to make sure that we understand that there will be no cost to the county. And so I'm requesting for approval for authorization to collect funds or and expense the funds.
Second.
Approved by O'Day, second by Stock. Supervisor Thomas has
handed. So, that area, there's an elementary school right on the corner.
Yes.
So is part of this plan to make turning lanes on that E and EA right now, to make that wider and to have entrances on E and EA? Is that?
No. However, we have schematic plans on how to improve the driveway on E, because that's the way the pick drop up and pick up takes place.
For the school.
For the school.
Right.
Yeah, so we have plans to kind of improve on that access in order to facilitate the traffic flow in and out of the school to the drop off.
Okay. So that road's not going to, that intersection or the, like, leading up to that intersection in all four directions is not going to be widened?
No.
How about the intersection of EA and H?
EA and H.
That's just like a mile south. Is that going to be?
No, this project is fully. So this.
Well, the reason I'm asking this is I look back, they want to build 516 new residences. And I don't know if this is what Summers still approved. This is from 2020. This is the only thing I could find on it. So it's 65 acres. They want to build 490 luxury apartments and 26 owner-occupied units. 98 two-bedroom townhomes, 19 12-unit two-bedroom townhomes, 10 19-unit apartments, mostly one-bedroom, and then 13 three-bedroom, two-story duplexes, which will be the owner-occupied. They are putting in roughly 1,200 parking spots. If you drive that way, I drive that way pretty frequently. They're putting up already a huge development right on Green Bay Road in L. I don't know how many hundreds of units are going to be there, right there on E and Green Bay Road. I don't know what they call that,
Hawthorne Hollow.
No, not Hawthorne Hollow. It might be all those apartments they just built back there. If we don't turn this into a four, at least turning lanes and wider, then we're going to be stuck with all that at some point. If they're not including turning lanes in there, especially around that school, when kids are getting picked up and dropped off, and obviously they're not going to be building these 590 or 516 units in a day, but if we can't have some vision on how that traffic is going to be impacted by, you know, if they're thinking they're going to need parking spaces for, they're putting spaces just for residential units at 1,069, and they're putting 85 visitor parking, if this is still accurate. That's all I have, is what that development's going to be.
Yeah.
There's no way in the world that when there's school going on and having only two-lane roads in every direction, there's no way that that's going to, no way that can that handle that.
Yeah. So, you know. So what you're saying is actually correct. So generally speaking, before these kind of projects are being carried out, you have to do a traffic impact analysis to understand how much traffic is being generated and how much traffic will be coming in there and how it's going to impact the traffic on the main road. All of those things have been done.
They have been done?
To the best of my knowledge, yes. So when we say they are constructing the highway, they're doing improvement on the highway, the improvement is to improve their access. It's not to improve the entire road for the county. So there'll be 10 lanes, like right turn lanes to shift the traffic that are making the right turns to go into the property. They're going to have right turn lanes, and they're going to have bypass lane, which is something which in a way is a four lane at that location. But yes, all those things will be part of the design. When you asked the question whether the intersection will be widened, that I said no. That I didn't mean that the road will not be widened where the driveway, the entrance to the property would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the entrance point, yes, there will have to be significant improvements, and yes, the school traffic is also in play. To be honest with you, we are working behind the scene. We have a schematic plan on how to improve it, but it is not included in the cost of this, because by the time, partly my fault, by the time I could get everything together. The project was so advanced that I couldn't,
sure,
because I had already accepted some of the things on the plan. Yeah. So we're going to figure it out. We're going to figure out working with the village as well. The village is ready to kind of co-share. They're not saying it loudly, but they are saying that they are ready to support whatever improvement we need to do at the entrance to the school. Yeah. So I don't have definitely how
I just have some concern. I mean, it's gonna. I mean, H. At some point, if you guys aren't familiar with H, that's Foxconn is on H at one end, and we have all the distribution off of 142 at the other. That's going to be a four-lane road at one point.
Which road?
H. And then there's going to be more traffic on EA, so we're going to end up having to put at least a four-way stop at E and EA at some point in the future with all that extra traffic right by a school.
Yes.
You know, I'm just projecting, you know, you'll have more kids walking to school. All kinds of other little things will come with that.
Yes, as part of this development, they have internal pedestrian accommodation to connect children living in this new development to go to school without necessarily getting to the highway.
Yeah. Oh, no, I understand that. I mean, but right across the street are,
How many hundreds of units are in that condo development right across the street?
I'm just saying it's going to be, looking in the future, that's really the only, besides, you know, Pleasant Prairie where they're getting, like, there's a ton of open land in Summers. And it's not going to do anything but grow, whether it's going to be industrial related or residential.
It may have to come to summer school.
Yeah. Maybe be one of the schools that actually grow in it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, but none of that is in that traffic impact study, none of that was looked at as far as widening any of that intersection or doing anything different at H where there's going to be a ton more traffic as a result of that. Because people go on EA and either turn right or left, you know, depending on where they have to go to work.
So they'll be doing a significant improvement on EA and on E. However, again, I'm a little bit ahead of myself, but there's no significant improvement at the intersection.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, I mean, for whatever is agreed upon doing, they're going to cover everything. I guess I'm not opposed to that, but man, I don't know if that's something on our agenda that you guys are looking at that, I don't know, 3x3 square mile area.
Is there a public information meeting scheduled or going to be one soon?
Yes, there will be a public information meeting scheduled sometime next year.
Yeah, after the holidays, I'm sure.
Yeah. Did they have a timeline when they were going to put a shovel in the dirt or anything?
No, they are waiting for this MOU because this acceptance comes with an MOU. So they are waiting for this MOU to go through, and then once that goes through, then we'll have definite dates when they're supposed to break ground.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. We are looking into all those traffic concerns, and we are trying to accommodate them as much as possible. My brain is a little bit rusty because it's a long time I looked at those plans.
Yeah.
So I can't detail it to you. Yeah, so I'll have to go back and take a look, and then I'll circle back with you. Yeah. But I know we took care of all of those things you were mentioning, but again, it's a long time I look at the plans, and right now it's more the engineers are looking at it more than I do, so they have more information than I do. So I can follow up with them, and then I'll circle back with you and show you some of the improvements that we made that will be accommodating some of your concerns.
Yeah. We could probably ask Jerry Smith for some money for improvements too. You guys want to drive by there October, there's like 1,000 cars over there. We'll hit him up too.
Supervisor Carroll has got
So some of the concerns that Supervisor Thomas brought up is some concerns that I have as well. I'm familiar with the area, but I don't travel through there on a regular basis. I recall when Highway E was rebuilt, probably back in the late 90s or something like that, and you know there hasn't been really much improvement since then in that area. And then that's kind of where my, you know, I don't know what the Memorandum of Understanding says. Feels like we're accepting money here, and we don't know all the details on that in the resolution. So I'm trying to read this and understand it, that you know, if there's, you know, we're responsible for some additional costs, for the cost of the project if it goes up. It doesn't state that in the resolution. Is that going to be stated in the memorandum of understanding?
So it is difficult to say that you know the exact amount of the project.
Yeah, I understand.
So it is understandable that for the developer understands that the prices might go up, the prices might go down, the inflation might occur, but because, as a matter of fact, this estimate was done last year, it wasn't even this year. So I'm even not sure whether this amount would be that amount.
I can understand that, but it just, it doesn't, in the resolution that's ahead, in front of us, mm-hmm. it doesn't say that. Oh. So therefore, I don't understand. It says it's an estimate, but it doesn't say that the developer is going to be responsible for additional costs or less cost. So it says it's an estimated amount. We're going to accept money, and we're going to hold it, what, in a trust or something like that, or that's what's going to happen here.
We're going to hold it in trust.
It's right here, Aaron, if you want to.
The memorandum of understanding.
And like 100 documents to go along with it.
So,
and platted out roads and everything in there.
Okay, because it says, now therefore be it resolved, the County Board of Supervisors approves the attached plat, which I don't see an attached plat.
There's a plat. Wendy, did you send the memorandum of understanding?
That's right there.
I think it was sent.
I thought I did. Maybe I didn't.
I didn't get it.
I can send it right now.
Maybe that's why.
Yeah, because it's like.
So, you know, as a public works committee, we're not in a county board, we're not approving a plat. But it says in the resolution that we're approving the attached plat and authorizing the acceptance of expenditure of $1.4 million.
There's a plat attached to it. And the reason is because in the past, I have the authority to approve those plats without coming to the committee. But when we're doing big projects, we're running into problems where we have legal issues with the residents. And we were advised by our legal counsel at that time that it's better that the county board approves these plats because it holds a lot of grounds in when you have legal things. So we just attach plats down. Most of the time, we will bring the plat here, send them to be approved. This development has a plat in it as well. So the reason I'm calling out the plat is because I want that plat to be considered approved so that if we happen to find ourselves in a legal situation, it will show that it was approved by the county board.
Okay.
Yeah.
What plat are we approving? Is it for just the right-of-way, or is it for the developed land?
No, highway right-of-way only. Okay. So because of the improvements that I'm going to do on the highway, it's going to require highway acquisition, right-of-way acquisition.
Right.
That right-of-way acquisition, you have to have a plat, and we have to file the plat and have a relocation order before you can even acquire the property.
Okay.
Yeah, so all those things are in that document, which was not sent.
Okay. So,
and the plat is just showing the right-of-way.
The plat is showing the right-of-way.
That's the school. That would be the first and the second right there. So, what on the plat, what specifically are we approving here? I'm looking at it, trying to pick up.
So,
if I. That we have 66 foot right of way, is it, do we have more than that?
It's going to be more than that. The 66 foot right of way is existent, but I think it's going to require 120 foot. So, it's going to add. 54 feet on both, half 27 feet on each side of the road.
So it looks like here there's an additional on the east side of EA for a certain distance north and south. It looks like there's an additional 17 feet on the east side, right? And same thing on the south side of Highway E is an additional 18 feet. Is what it looks like.
Whatever.
So it's the 66, and then on the side of the improvement, it's either 17 or 18 feet. Is that what we're being asked to approve?
Again, as I said, I don't know the details of the plan, but yes, we're going to acquire some additional right of way in order to fit in the improvement that is required. Okay. So all those additional piece of property you're you're talking about, that is what we're going to be acquiring, and that is the plat.
Okay. And then there's already a preliminary design done?
There's a preliminary design, and it's also included in all of those things.
Okay.
All of them are in there.
And so that's, we're confident that that's going to be sufficient for what? For what the developer's doing here?
Correct. At the time when I was reviewing it, I believe it's adequate. But, again, the engineers are looking at it right now, except they come up with something more.
Okay.
So if the scope changes, MOU covers that?
If scope changes, yeah, the covers that.
So if we need 22 feet instead of 17 feet, that's possible?
No,
we approved it?
For the, in terms of the right-of-way acquisition that we need, it's going to be on that plat. If we need more than what is on that plat, then we'll have to do a plat amendment.
Okay.
And all those things is part of construction, so it happens from time to time.
Are you clear on all this?
Okay. I was just...
Yeah, I know the only reason...
Because I'm like, I've never... At a public works committee, I haven't been asked to approve a plat before.
So yeah, I know, but that's what we decided to be doing, that just to have more defense. The reason we're doing all of this is because of Highway S. We had a lot of issues. It took us more than 4 years to really finalize the last legal issue. And so we learned a lot from there, and then we found out that it was better for the county board to approve the plat, and then it would show that it's the county board, and then the court, court sees them, or the attorneys, they see them as more powerful, because one of the lawyers accused me of being biased, and so that I'm not, my judgment, you can't just take one person's opinion to sign those things. So that's why we started doing what we are doing.
Seems the wise thing to do. I just want to make full understanding, so when I vote for this, I know what I'm voting for.
Yes, sir. And I think I'll look for a way to send the remaining of the documents that did not come through. I thought they all came through.
Okay. It was just this 5-page, you know, resolution with the funding on it. So
yeah, unless Wendy sent it separately, which I looked through the email, I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I was just explaining, thinking that you guys saw the entire document. So.
Right. Just the resolution.
Okay.
So, and I guess my biggest concern is just that if the cost is more, that they're still responsible for it. And then there's another twist on this too, when you talked about the village potentially being involved in it as well, is that, you know, that we, you know.
The village is involved.
I understand. It's just that that's, you know, right now, there's 1.4 million written in here. That's what everybody gets in their mind. And it doesn't say if it's more or if it's less on here, and I just want to cover ourselves if it's more. That we're not contributing to somebody, to a developer's roadway improvements.
Yeah.
That's what I want to, I don't want it to happen.
Yeah, we can, we'll send the, I'll try as much as possible to see if we could send the full package to you guys as quickly as possible.
Okay.
That way you can see the whole thing.
Is there an urgency behind this to get it, to keep it moving at all, or?
Yes. If it's not approved, then we cannot really start the right-of-way acquisition, because I need to file that plat. And if it's not approved, they cannot give us the funds to start the right-of-way acquisition.
The right-of-way acquisition, it looks like it's all on developer property, so we have to acquire it from the developer, or?
No, part of it is across the street, which is not the developer's property. That one we are acquiring, and then the one at the developer's property he's dedicating.
So I just see this, and to me it appears that it's just the strip along here and the strip along here.
Correct. So if you notice where it is, this is the driveway. This side of this road, anything that is within that developer's property, we don't need to acquire, because
right,
that's his property, he can dedicate that. When it is across the street, then that's
I understand that, yeah. But I just, on this map, it didn't show anything across the street. So
I'll need our surveyor to come in and do.
So there might be other exhibits to this CSM.
Yeah, I think this is
that are that we don't.
No, this is a CSM right of way dedication. So this one will be more dedication. This is not the acquisition. So this is on the developer side. So that is true because it is a CSM. We cannot include. These are all certified survey maps. Certified survey map is not a plat. The plat is different there. Okay. A certified survey map is only pertaining to the developer's property.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I think in general what we're doing is basically placing trust in you that that our approval here is giving you the authority to do what you need to do. Is that
correct? That's okay. Basically.
Supervisor Scott.
Well, that he actually asked about my question was pertaining to the plat. I mean, as far as tonight goes, I would be. This still has to do with finance for respect to the board, correct?
Yes.
So, I mean, that should give us ample time to review any documents before you vote on the board floor. So,
right.
I would support moving forward tonight, just so long as we do get that document so that it's in the board.
That's the sections.
That's
awesome. The plot.
I just want to read a couple things from this MOU when you pulled it out, and I pulled out what Supervisor Carroll's looking at. So it just sort of describes the purpose. This is 1B. The parties are entering into this MOU to promote highway safety, improve roadway conditions, handle increased traffic, and encourage future economic development in the area. The parties deem this MOU to be the most expeditious and least expensive approach to improve the roadway and intersection profiles and handle increased traffic. Okay, and then I looked. Responsibilities of Somerville LLC. 1, fund the real estate acquisition and design and construction of all roadway improvements. And 2, responsible for any utility relocation costs for all utilities located outside the right-of-way. And then it goes to B, project cost and payments. Outlined is a breakdown of the overall project cost, real estate acquisition, $210,264. Roadway improvements, $1,100,000. Construction management, just a hair over $96,000. And the total comes to that 1.4 something. So, I mean, it's pretty detailed. And then, I mean, we didn't get a chance to look, but
yeah.
I don't think it leaves us hanging out anywhere. It's pretty well spelled out. We've got to cover anything on there. And it doesn't define on that MOU that it's just limited to those areas. If we come back after the study and say we have to do something with an intersection, then we can do that as well. It's not limiting. It's pretty broad. It's pretty broad on the highway safety part of it. So.
It also states that if it comes back at bid more than 120% of the estimate shown, that nothing will proceed until the county and Somerville have met, and the county has, or Somerville has deposited with the county the final roadway improvement cost, less than a previously amount paid. So it does go into a lot of detail, like you said, that was a little further down where he was reading.
See, the resolution was written with the understanding that you read the MOU. So unfortunately, it wasn't sent out. We sent them out.
Okay.
Whatever. Whoever. So it sounds like there's a couple developers that are going to be coming through here soon and developing things. And that sounds like it's going to increase the need for changes to the road down the road. Is it possible to say, hey, let's do this all at once? And maybe they could, you know, if you did it all at once, you could all, you know, maybe be cheaper for them in the long run. Just a thought. And I think we could go ahead and vote on this tonight and still try and accomplish that. But I just wanted to throw that out as a potential.
Yeah, what you're saying is the best way to do it. The challenge is that he can only acquire so much right of way. If you go beyond what he's acquiring and you don't have the right of way, then you will not be able to expand as much. Yeah, but yeah, you're correct. That's the best way to do it. Do it all at once and get out. But right now we are doing them in piecemeal just because the developers are coming at random. They're not all coming at the same time, and so you try to optimize based on what you have at that time.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept?
A motion to approve. There was.
Yeah, there
was.
There was.
Oh, yeah, there was.
You want to be
discussed. Yeah, this was discussion. Yeah.
Last track, too.
One is not here just yet.
We didn't change it. Just, we should all have that email on the MOU.
Yeah. All right. Any further discussion? All right. Seeing no further discussion.
Aye.
Vote for it. Okay. Rest of the committee?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. So, now it goes to finance, right?
So when you get back here.
Yeah. We'll lose from what's going on.
Yeah, it's only
the next meeting is the 11th, right?
I think so.
Okay, we have another resolution.
Yeah. The second resolution is to approve the formation of a focus committee as a requirement for the development of the Kenosha County Safety Action Plan. So we all know that the traditional funding source is getting drier and drier, and it is becoming difficult to get funds. So we've been exploring other ways to get funds, and one of the ways is to go to after the federal grants. One of the requirements to be eligible to get federal grants is to have a comprehensive safety action plan. And we applied for funding, and we were fortunate to be awarded grants to carry out this comprehensive safety action plan. As part of this plan, it is recommended that we have a focus committee that will be from time to time providing input. It will be people that live in the community and kind of give input and try to review and give some sort of, I don't want to say oversight, but more of a input in terms of where they're finding issues, the challenges within the community. And so if you look at the list that we sent out, those are community leaders in the various areas in the county. So that group has already been, we have contacted everybody and have their consent. And so we are just bringing it in front of the board so that it has some power in itself, that it was approved by the board, county board. And so for me to do that, I have to go through the county, the committee before I take it to the board. And the chair of that committee will be Shelley, and then the vice chair is Andy Boer.
Sure. Do you have any questions?
Bueller.
Yeah?
Bueller.
Oh, Bueller.
I do that too.
Did we look at some of this in the past? Was some of this, I don't want to say maybe necessarily in this format?
I used to do it for myself,
yeah, okay.
But it wasn't as comprehensive. And we used to do that safety inventory study,
yeah,
that we'd yeah, look at the entire county, and then that's how we were prioritizing our projects.
Yeah.
I tried to use that as in place of this to apply for funding. They told me it wasn't adequate. And so that's why we're doing the comprehensive safety plan now.
And then, go ahead.
So there's already a, I don't know if you want to call it, they meet quarterly. The city, Pleasant Prairie, they have and they look at accidents that have already happened. Sometimes if there's a death, they'll look at the cause of death.
It's the Safety Commission.
It's a what?
The Safety Commission.
Is that what it's called, the Safety Commission?
I'm part of the
Yeah, I mean, and there's Pleasant Prairie is on that. I don't know if, I think there's someone on the county sheriff's department that's on that. Mm-hmm. I've went to it a couple times last year. And how would something like that be different, if you're familiar with it, how would that be different than what this can do? And are we just sort of mimicking what they're doing? You know, or what would, I'm just trying to understand if they're going to be the same thing, but one's for county roads, one's for east of the eye, basically one's for west of the eye. Because they look at those same thing, hot spots, and, you know, they looked at Green Bay Road, and that's why Green Bay Road got sort of closed where you can turn left and those type of things. And but go ahead.
Yeah, excellent question. Very excellent. The Highway Commission, the Safety Commission, focuses on fatality. And then we record those fatalities and bring it to the attention to the local municipality. So like if it's a county highway, they'll throw it at me and then can you take a look and see what can be done? And that's about it. With the comprehensive action plan that is only a component of the action plan. So the action plan does not only look at the crashes, it also looks at the geometric of the road, it also looks at the community, it also looks at the population, it is how you are really serving the population. So it goes way beyond just the crashes. But the crashes, of course, is also the fundamental component that you start off the crashes, okay, this is where the crashes are. And the other advantage of the Comprehensive Safety Action Plan is that it gives you, it builds up indicators to tell you at what point you are going to achieve zero fatality. Because the goal is to reduce zero and injury fatality to zero. So it gives you a plan, and then it tells you what are the things you need to do. And those things that you need to do are the projects. And once you identify the projects, then they become eligible for federal funds. Meanwhile, with the Highway Safety Commission, yes, you'll be talking mainly about the crashes, and then to say, okay, is there anything we can do? But they don't drive as hard as, oh, you have to come up with a solution. With the Safety Action Plan, you have to come up with a solution. And then once you come up with a solution, that solution becomes a project. And then you can then prioritize, and then you can use it to apply for funding. And the also advantage with this is that it does not only focus on just highways. It also involves trails, other mode of transportation. It's not just highways. If we had a sea, we could have been looking at transportation by sea as well, and all those things. So this safety analysis can cover all of those. Meanwhile, the other one just focuses on highways.
So is this looking from Lake Michigan to, you know, the far west coast of Kenosha County, or is
correct? Okay. Every part of Kenosha County, but unfortunately, I'm focusing only on county highways.
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's the area I have jurisdiction.
So it could go east and west, depending on.
Yes. Okay. It can go east. As a matter of fact, we'll be touching every breadth of the county.
Yeah. So if you guys can come up with this commission, if you can find a way that sends some type of magnetic impulse into someone's car when they go through a red light to stop them, I'll donate to that.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Is there a determined number of people that have to be on this?
No, there is no determined number. The only reason we have that is that we're trying to be very inclusive to get every person from every little town and village and city so that it is fully represented. And then when we meet, they will tell us, okay, this is what they're seeing. And then just so it's not here, but we are also planning to have another I don't know, we'll call it advisory committee, which will be more internal staff, especially the patrol workers, all the guys working on the road. They'll know exactly which corner of the part, and they'll also be, the sheriff will also be there to tell us that this is what they are noticing in areas, this the traffic pattern, the traffic behavior of the traveling public, this is what is happening, and then they'll put all those things in factor and then see, okay, how can we bring this down to make sure that, again, the goal is to get fatality and injury crashes to zero. Yeah. But to me, the most important thing is that it's going to give us another avenue for funding for our projects.
$300,000 is supposed to cover whatever the cost of this?
Correct.
Is that going to be something you have to come back every year to get this grant then?
So this grant is once we do this study, it's good for 5 years. So it's good for 5 years.
5 years.
So after 5 years, then you need to revise, do some amendment. The reason being that FHWA will not take anything more than 5 years old. So that simply means that you have to be at least going back to this document. If you want those funds to continue, go back to this document and update them and say, okay, where are we? And it's good because it also tells you whether you are achieving that zero fatality, and which will be connected very soon, more so with the traffic commission. Yeah, because then they're seeing how, oh, last year we had 5 fatality, this year we had 2, and then maybe in 5 years time there's 0 fatality, and then you have achieved that goal. Because those are some of the things we'll be tracking in order to update this document.
So the action plan is just that. Once you realize there's fatalities or injuries, now you have to come up with a plan. The plan has to come up with a design, and the design has to come up with money, and that has to have to be approved. So there's quite a bit of work after a plan is
correct.
Put together.
So
it has to be a commitment,
yes,
from the county to see this through.
To see this through, exactly. Okay. And you see, once this plan is done, it will highlight those hot spots, so to speak. And then you would say, okay, in order, it's a capacity issue, that's why they're having these crashes. Okay, maybe we need to expand to 4 lanes. And then that becomes your project.
Right.
And then instead of just applying to the DOT for the STP funding, now I can also apply to use the same projects and apply for funding from the FHWA, which they're completely separate. So it gives you additional funding.
It kind of gives us a guideline too, what roads maybe that we were going to be looking at, year 2, year 3, year 4.
That this plan will address that, will now put it in a schedule.
Okay.
And then it will also be easy now. In fact, it becomes your CIP.
Right.
It can be your CIP schedule for 10, 15 years.
And if I can add, it'll be a strategic plan. So there's going to be more years than we have dollars to, right?
Yeah.
So they only say every 5 years you got to update it. So your priority list may change. Your 12th road may become your 5th road in that 5th year, so they just want you to reevaluate that plan every 5 years to resubmit.
So it's a plan we put together that addresses 5 years out.
Yeah,
every 5 years we readdress the plan for the next 5 years.
Correct.
Okay.
But it may be, the initial plan may be 30 years with the roadway projects that we may have to do.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess my last question. Maybe unless you answer, and I have another one. But the $300,000, so that will go to pay for a third party to do studies in different areas?
Yes, we already have it on board.
Right, so it's just to expand some traffic study, road study company, that's what they specialize in, some consultants, that's what...
Write the report.
Right. Okay, does any of it attribute to the additional time that, like, whoever's going to be on that committee that's an employee of the county? Does it go to compensate for overtime or other things like that?
No.
So it's just strictly we're just a pass-through.
Correct.
You guys identify who's skilled at looking at X, Y, and Z. You send it out for bid for a couple people or however that works. So.
Correct.
All right, good enough.
Yeah, and it's 80-20 split. So for the $300,000, we're expected to...
That's
60,000
for the total expenses.
Yeah. Total, yes, it's 300, and then the county is supposed to pay 60,000.
Any other questions? Do you have any? I guess I'll need a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Motion to resolution. Motion approved by Supervisor Carroll. Is there a second?
Second.
Supervisor Stock seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, here's the governance.
Aye.
Okay, the rest of the committee?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion carries.
Looks good. Look forward to that report.
Oh, yeah. We're all excited because...
I guess the one question I did have is when... Once it gets approved, how long does it take to get an action? Is it a year to get the safety action plan? Give us a timeline-wise?
No, the action plan... So at some point, the action plan is the final product by which is we are looking at October of this year, of next year.
Sure.
So that would be the action plan is the product. That
yeah,
is the,
right. So 10 months. You're looking.
10 months, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And it will also be presented to this committee at some point. And I don't know whether we'll present it halfway. I think we'll present it when we are so close to finalizing it, so that if we have to make any adjustment, we can make them before then.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, so just so you know, it's the SS4A program that we talked about.
The SS4A.
Oh, you forgot it. You sent it to me and I said I was working on it. That is the program. That was the program I said I was working on. So that's where we are right now.
Okay. That was 10 months ago. Maybe a year.
See, 10 months ago, but we got the $300,000 for funding. For, you know,
very good. No, it's. I applaud your hard work on that.
You still have the floor, Clement. Is there anything you'd like to add, or does anybody have any questions about his regular division report? I know there's a speed study you're doing.
Yeah, the speed study, I don't know what. Did you send the speed study?
I believe I did.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. The speed study was, they had some concern on Highway O from Highway 50 going south to Highway F. And there was some concerns, not only speeding, but when speeding was one of the ones that they finally decided that we should look into. So we did a speed study, and based on the speed study, they were actually requesting for two things for speed, lowering the speed limit and extending the double yellow line, or that is no passing zone. And so when we evaluated all of those based on the federal standards, it was determined that the speed limit is where it's supposed to be. There was no, the study did not support the extension of the no passing zone.
Yeah, they wanted to go from where it's at 55 mile an hour down to 35, right?
To from 45 to 35.
To 35, yeah. And I can tell you right now, if they did that, there'd be more speed.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that would change.
It was just crazy out there. Because I know when I reduced to 35 going there, boy, you see these guys just stand in their car and nose, trying not to rear end me, because they're not going 35 at the time, and they're not going to not go 35 miles an hour.
They don't have a desire to go 35 either.
Yeah. There's a school up there already, and they don't care. They just don't care. Same thing with Highway C in front of Trevor School, 35 mile high. It's just ridiculous. So anyway, conclusion is no changes.
No changes.
Warranted at this period of time.
It's also worth noting that the other concerns that they brought up, we are addressing that. We observed that there were concerns with the traffic during drop-off and pick-up for the school. And so we are currently working on the design on how we are going to mitigate that issue, which we believe adding a turn lane in and a bypass lane in
into the school.
During pick-up and stuff. That way, the car doesn't back up and you get the honking and all sort of signs that you don't want to see.
Yeah, because we do have bypass lanes like in front of a tree, right?
So that's what we're doing.
And people are turning left, going down under the road and across from tree. We all go into the right turn lane to pass. It all works. Go ahead, Supervisor Stock.
Thanks. I had called you, Clement, about a week and a half ago in regards to just with the casino coming to the county board asking, my question to you was, what is our timeline for K getting updated? So could you just run through that real quickly, just
the current timeline?
What our current timeline is for K, and if this project moves forward, as they're anticipating, I saw anticipated opening, they were hoping like 2026, what would it take for us to speed that up if needed so that we could open those lanes up or widen that road? Like, what would it take from a county's perspective, from a public works, to be able to widen that road or get it to where it would need to be to, assuming that we would need that, because I'm pretty sure that would be needed, additional lane signals in the sections. Could you just kind of run through that, kind of what we would need to do as a county to prepare for that?
Sure. Currently, what is holding the project is just funding. If we have funding, the project will keep going. And we were just recently notified that just like north of $303 million is available for the STP funding. That's all that we have. So we are going to go after the $3 million and with some of the funds that we have for the, like, funds for the intersection, we're going to put that up and try to see how we could continue with the project from 94th Court going towards 115th Avenue. I'm hoping that by the time we are completing that project, because the design will take about 2 years and construction a year and a half. So I'm looking at completing it 24, 25. 26, 27. So by 27, by the end of 26, I'll be at 115th Avenue. And I'm hoping that by that time, we'll be applying for funds, and we'll have enough funding to continue from 115 to 128th Avenue. So if I'm looking at it, then the possibility is that we'll start 120 from 115 to 128 by 2026-27.
Okay. And that is keeping with picking up where we stopped and moving past the interstate. Does it make any sense to start out the interstate and work our way back?
Absolutely. Because you see, the difference is that the logical terminal for these projects is, like, the interstate could be a logical terminal. And the fact that it's close to the interstate, it can work in that system by combining it with the interstate and make that work, and it will not impact the work that's happening on K. So yes, if it can be done, I would advise that we should be doing that.
Okay. So basically, what the biggest holdback is, the engineering will take a minimum of 2 years, maximum of 2 years.
Typically, because of how
is that something that can be sped up or not sped up? Sorry, that's kind of where I'm going with it.
It's difficult to speed it up because of the DOT process. They call it the NEPA process. So you have to follow the environmental documents, then all the endangered species, historical review, all those things that take time. And it's sometimes difficult, but it can be expedited, and we can push and push, and then we can push just so much.
So if we had the money tomorrow, that would be our biggest holdup, would be just the engineering and the planning stage.
Correct.
Okay. And then last question on that. Would this next leg, would it be one phase to go from where we stopped to the highway, or is that like... How many phases do we have left to get all the way up?
We still have two phases.
So that's two more phases.
So the one we're talking about from 94 Court to 115 is the second phase.
115, just for my...
That road goes to the former Greyhound.
Okay.
Yes.
The old Dairyland.
That's 104. No,
beyond west of 104.
Okay, so just a little bit further. Okay, got it. That's all I had on that.
So the engineering, could it be all done at one time? Or are we looking at, if that casino comes in, we would engineer that part of it differently or any part of it differently?
So The problem is the funding. If the funding is not there, I can't start the design. I agree. We could go ahead and say, if the county have funds and sponsor the design, we can go ahead and do all the design and do the right-of-way acquisition, because the right-of-way acquisition will never be funded with STP funding.
Right.
So, yes, we can do that. The issue has always been, do we really have the funds to do that?
We're the only one creating the phases. The county's the only one creating the phases.
Yeah.
So, really, realistically, you could do that all in one phase if you had the funds to do that.
So the question then, the second part of my question was, would things change should the casino go in? Would we be looking at a bigger road, a wider road, three lanes, six lanes, multi-lane, different heights? You know, what would we do differently knowing that a casino is going in there, and compared to what we think we would need today when there is no casino?
Even with the casino, you would need four lanes.
It would be, but that's all we would need.
That's all I think we need, yes.
They would still be required to do a TIA.
Yeah,
I think they still have to do their traffic impact analysis,
so we're still looking,
which could require more if whatever their peak is. We don't know that yet.
We're still at that point yet. Because,
it could be.
Can only go so far wide because you're going underneath 94. If it says we need more lanes, that means the feds have to widen that opening.
So,
2027 before that gets,
just to give you some just looking at it just from maybe 3,000 feet, Highway K is not connected to the interstate.
No.
And so most of the travel that will be coming from the
we're coming off the interstate.
So the local traffic will still stay the same, and so your capacity will not change.
Okay.
So if the time that you think of increasing your capacity is if the traffic on interstate has to come through K to go to the casino, then you can see that. So if I just look at it from that simplistic way of looking at it, I would say that it's still going to be the same.
And the frontage roads are state owned, so we don't have to work with, well, they're putting the lights in. They'd be putting the traffic signals in according to the current IGA with the casinos at K and
77.
I think it was
70.
Is that the
intersection
by Cracker Row?
No.
Yeah, right.
Is it going to be two signal or one signal?
I would think there would be three. Then you see one on 50 by the hotels, one by Cracker Row, and one at K.
Yeah.
So I just have a curiosity question for Shelley back from your city days. There's no water or sewer line that goes from H west on K. Correct.
It goes up to about, I believe, around 128
watt. Oh, does it? And then it goes out to Strawberry Creek from there?
No.
Or does that go a different route?
That's a different route, I believe. I wasn't on the water, but I do know they got water out to K. It's pretty well.
Strawberry Creek, it goes underneath just north of Cracker Barrel.
Okay.
That's where the water goes.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a little south of K then. So that's a little south of K then.
Yeah.
I was just curious, because if we put the road and then they have to run water and sewer out there, then they're going to have to tear up the road.
No, they will not tear up the road.
Oh, it's okay.
So
that's why I was curious. I don't understand all the underground stuff, and you know, so.
So just to give you some background, last year, 2 years ago, we resurfaced K, and that's when they brought the water. So they came when we just resurfaced, so they said, no, we just said, no, you can't get the road. They do directional boring,
yeah. All right. Because I know some of those houses are on wells, and they have their own septics right along K there between 94 and H. Yeah, it's because it's summer. It's a weird little island there. All right.
Is there anything else that you wanted to report on, or anybody else have any questions?
I had one more question. Just an update on, what is it, EZ and State Line Road?
Okay.
Just haven't heard on that in a while, so curious what's going on there.
EZ and State Line Road,
Russell Road.
The design, again, the design is being done by Lake County. I think they've done the design, but they keep going back and forth with some details. The plat, I was hoping that I was planning to bring the plat to this meeting for approval, but I was advised by the engineer that I should hold on because he wants to take a second look at something. So as soon as it's done. But it's, yeah, goal is to, the goal is to start real estate acquisition as early as February, March.
Okay.
One thing about Lake County, they have all the time. They're never in a hurry. And our engineers are very patient.
Okay. Thank you for the update. That's really all I was looking for.
I'll get them as soon as they tell me it's good to present it here.
Okay. On the regular division report, anybody have any questions, concerns? Everything's about how you reported it. Nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed.
All right. Thank you, Clement. We'll move on to Jim with golf.
Thank you for your lively meeting.
Jim, any updates from what you reported or anything more that you need to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think rounds numbers went up by maybe a couple hundred between the 13th and the closing on the 19th. We closed Brightdale on that Friday and Petrified Pines on that Sunday. Brightdale had to close due to hunting season starting. Always gone hunting season, so rounds numbers went up by a couple hundred during that week, but no changes.
But about 2,000 rounds more in 2023 than in 2022.
Yes, another good season. Golf rounds nationally have stayed up, so it's a trend that has been really good for 4 years, and we certainly hope it continues.
I have a question for you. With the simulators,
yes.
Are those up and going now?
They are up and going at Brightdale.
What's the cost for the simulator?
The simulators, I believe it's $22 per hour. I will double check that.
Okay. Is that any time in the day? Does it go up?
I don't think it the rate changes.
Is it on the website?
Yes. And then we do have, our league is up. They now have 82 in the simulator league out there. So
82 in the league?
82 in the league. Wow. I really look closely at the contrast between having them in Pets and Brightdale, and what we found was that at Brightdale we were doing a little better, and the main thing was our league participation was growing, and it's grown again. It was at the 50s last year, and it's now above 80. So,
really have you checked around to the other simulators and the other golf courses? See what they're charging.
I have not, but I will.
Could you go ahead and do that? I'd like to see where we are with that. 22 seems very reasonable to me. I may have to start visiting.
Yeah, there's simulators. I'm sure you probably know Tavern on 6th.
Yep.
They have a golf league, and then the place on Highway 50.
The X-Golf on Highway 50. Yeah, yeah. It's becoming more and more. I just got an email from the National Golf Foundation saying that the usage is up everywhere. It's becoming more and more popular. So.
And if you know places like Hawksview and Waterford, you know, if they were more and all that, if you check Evergreen, see what they all have, because that's where the Western players would go instead of going to Endless Ocean.
Yep.
Would be going, they wouldn't be driving into the city necessarily unless they are so diehard. And we want to get the masses of the average people playing rather than a few diehards.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions? Go ahead, Supervisor Stock.
Yeah, just a couple. Just to continue on the simulator discussion, I just looked up X Golf just for fun of it, and it's looking like $40 or maybe, I'm assuming, an hour for a simulator booking there. How does our equipment compare to some of these other places?
We have the launch monitor we use is a Flight Scope. There's two launch monitors that are probably a notch above everything else, and that's the TrackMan and the GC Quad. Flight Scope is just a notch below, but overall the data it gives you, I mean, to anyone other than high level players, it really doesn't make a difference. Flight Scope is more than adequate to be fit on, given that the fitter knows the parameters. But for simulator golf, I would say it stacks right up there with anything anybody has other than. You know, TrackMan and GC Quad, one TrackMan unit, it's essentially a Doppler radar that sits behind the player. They're roughly 25,000 brand new. They were 5 years ago. They may be up to 30 now. When Flight Scopes were more like 18 to 19,000. So
That was back when they were purchased. So now I'm sure both of those prices have skyrocketed along with everything else. But it's they're right there in the upper echelon of available launch monitors.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the competition. It would be if so long as we can provide the experience. Just a marketing avenue for you guys probably start marketing to the same people, same groups that these other simulators are marketing to, which is corporate. They have like business meetups, birthday parties, that kind of stuff. It's not just your golfing people; it's more like a social environment.
Right.
With our clubhouses, you might be able to cater to that a little bit more, or market to that a little bit heavier, just to help bring revenue to that line.
Right.
Other comment, just being a first-term supervisor on the Public Works Committee, I'm glad to see that by the end of my first term, it looks like we got the Red Pines irrigation, because that was just being talked about when I started. It looks like it's the full circle now, so it's finally being done after 2 years. So I'm glad to be able to see it almost to completion.
That's right.
I saw them like, wow, that was here when I started.
A few touch-ups in the spring, and that one will be wrapped up. We're excited about it, too.
Cool. That's all I have.
Supervisor Thomas? Yeah.
Question, so on the 80 plus that are in a league, what time of day is that typically held?
They play between, you have to play year round anytime that week. So they usually, like today's pretty slow, Monday's usually pretty slow, but typically between Tuesday and Friday, people in the league will schedule their time to come in and log their round.
So they don't come in and like sort of watch each other take turns?
Some do. And groups of friends will come in at different times together, but realistically, the most that it's enjoyable with two simulators in there.
Yeah.
You get more than eight people in there and it becomes pretty,
Right. I'm just trying to think of like bowling, how everyone sort of has, and there's a certain amount of people.
Yes.
So is there do you monitor the time of day that are busiest? Is it in the mornings or afternoons or early evenings, or what's that?
Just by my eye, I would say early evenings when the time most folks get off work. But we do have a lot of, the older generation that's retired that comes in the middle of the day too, so there's a good mix. But I would say early evening is our best.
I would. Where my brain was going with this was that is having some kind of time where we reach out to the high school golf coaches, and because they're generally in that going to be in that soft spot from 3 to 6, maybe that's a dead time. Where I'm sure you already have some, probably especially the West Scotia girls being two-time state champ. I'm just trying to think where you can fill in that soft time where you have somebody there, but really no one's using it.
Right.
And you just say, hey, we're blocking off time in the winter if you want to have, for a better way to say, practice. They can't technically have practice before the season starts, but
they can have practice without the coach, though.
Or the coach can go there and watch.
Yeah.
He can organize it. He just can't call it.
They have to be careful with WIAA rules, though. They can't have any sanctions.
I coached for a really long time. I know the rules. So he could organize it. He just can't coach.
He's just
sort of like open gym.
Exactly.
Right.
But he could say, hey, we're going to have open gym at Brightondale from 3 to 4. And there's so many schools that have a golf team, you could probably have one night a week or, where you could fit in maybe two high schools and they would all, trust me, the coaches would.
Oh, and as someone who played high school golf, any swings you can get in the winter.
Oh, no, exactly.
I had to find some heated driving ranges where the heaters didn't work and it was Shirley Golf Center.
I know.
I spent my winter.
Yeah, we grew up, he grew up in the same area I grew up in, so we could talk common stuff. But, I just think that would be an easy thing to.
Yeah.
And then maybe it doesn't, you get a couple the first year, but I think that would be something everybody would latch on to. So, all right, that was my two. Oh, and thanks for making the contact on the first tee.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll follow up again.
That's one of the, Nick looked it up in the accounting system. I looked it up online. It looks like it's $22.50 per half hour. So
per half hour.
$22.50 per half hour.
Yeah.
Is there online booking for that?
Yeah.
Anybody else have any questions?
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, just a question on protocol. I know we have rain days and carts are not allowed on the course, and it's a good thing because the course can be thrown out
Yeah.
Have you ever heard, and one of the players in my leagues mentioned this, and other individuals as well, if they are disabled, if they have a sticker on the car that says they're, you know, handicapped, whatever, have you ever seen courses do a 90-degree rule for those?
For cars with the handicap flags? Yep. Yes, and I've done it once since becoming director. I had a group contact me. You know, it's a tricky situation because once you do it for one, once you make an exception, then, you know, it can kind of snowball on you. So I try to keep that on a case-by-case basis and not have a broadcast policy. And it also depends, is it cart path only that day, and is it real close to being okay?
Right.
Maybe we can do it. If it's cart path only and it's absolutely soaked, you know, I'll say it's nothing I'd want to put in writing because it's a tricky, sure, you know, it's sort of a case-by-case scenario.
So maybe we could have a discussion with the clubhouse managers and they could basically have some amount of jurisprudence on that if you're comfortable with that.
Yeah.
But at least I could alert these two league players that I'm familiar with. It may come to pass that it's circumstance, you know, directed, but it is at least it's a possibility if you are a legitimate handicapped person.
Right.
So, kind of for the discussion.
Yeah.
Doesn't every golfer have a handicap?
Some more than others.
Some more than others.
That's my question. Thank
you. I got one question, and you know, the maintenance facility at Pets. It's been a little while since we've heard anything about that. I'm curious what the direction was.
So we had an initial meeting with John Wallencamp, and he was going to begin throwing some ideas at us, and we kind of talked to him about a few of our desires and a few of our needs in terms of a potential for a parks and golf joint facility to sort of capitalize on some efficiencies there. And so he's going to produce some ideas for us based on the feedback we gave him and feedback he gave us. And we're going to evaluate that as a team and sort of see what road that leads us down. But it's something certainly financially is we found to be worth exploring.
Okay. All right. So still in the infancy stages.
Yes.
Yes, sir. So, Zach, you're going to have to stick around a lot longer.
That's right.
All right.
That's right.
I'll do that.
By the time I retire, we should have the
show. That's right.
You and me both.
We'll have the red irrigation.
Okay.
We'll be doing it again.
That's it. We'll move on to Matt's Torino facilities. I know Supervisor Thomas will have a question. First, Matt, anything you add or update?
Thank you, Chairman. I do have a typo. Nothing new to add, but on the brick site fire protection, piping modifications. Phase one is complete, but phase two I have in here that's going to be, will begin second quarter of 2021. That's not accurate. Try to begin phase two first quarter of 2024. So, not sure what happens. Other than that, everything is accurate.
So. Okay. Supervisor Thomas,
question. All righty. If I can ask my question again. So on the page one of the report, it talks about the exterior building renovation, and the projected budget was $102,000. Looks like it's going to be half that, actually less than half that. We're going to come in at like $46,500 because it got rebid. It was the same work that needed to get done, correct? It just came in substantially lower.
So this fund is for multiple projects. So we have the first phase of this multiple project was this East Entry Door. We do have two other smaller projects that will be completed out of this.
That are associated with this same 102?
Correct.
Okay, yes. That answers that. It just said fourth quarter was going to be done. I'm saying, okay, well, it looks like we're going to have some money left over. But there's...
Yeah, the other two phases are still in design.
Yeah, okay, all right, fair enough.
Correct, yeah, doorways at Mount Arrow and then some stone repairs at KCAP.
Okay, so that references the three projects, the initials on the top. So
correct.
Which one just got done then? I'm just curious.
The KCAP East Entryway.
Okay. All right. So the other two haven't been designed yet.
Correct, they're in design.
That's why it was only a $4,000 engineering
Correct.
Okay, all right, that makes sense. All right, that's all I had. I would say, man alive, we're going to have to send everything out for a rebid if we can save 56 grand.
I agree with Supervisor Thomas. Any other questions for Mr. Schumann? No. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Now we get on to parks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first thing in front of the committee this evening is to review and approve the 2024 park entry fees. There are no requested changes from 2023 to 2024, so everything is as was. And this is something that goes on to the Public Works Committee level as a standalone and does not need finance or board adoption or approval. The reason why we're bringing it this evening is we like to be proactive because we open up our pavilion reservations starting on January 2nd or 3rd, or whenever we get back. We put those online for people to start to rent out those pavilions, which is extremely popular for whatever reason that day. So this way, this will give us approval to move forward and adopt and get those pavilions online by the first of the year.
Okay,
I
have a motion to accept the 2024 park fees.
Well, I've got
a question. Well, I'll ask questions.
Oh, make a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the 2024 county park fees.
And who seconded? Supervisor Stein. Okay. Discussion.
All right. So just one
question. Go ahead,
Supervisor. So I looked at what was online and then what was. Is the dog entry, the dog park entry fees for non resident resident, is that a new, the $6 and $3? Is that?
That was changed last year because of DNR requirements that you cannot charge more than double of what a resident is versus non-resident.
Yeah, no, I guess what I'm asking, was that on the fee structure last year? I didn't. If it was, I overlooked it on the website. Yeah, was it? Okay, then I just overlooked it. How do people pay that?
We have it online. Supervisor Stock and I work very closely together that we have QR codes at each dog park.
There's QR codes there.
Yep.
Okay,
that's. And then we also have it if you have cash that you can pay in person.
There's like a little drop box or something. Okay. So, again, this will just led me to another question. So, on the park fees, where they get the license or whatever, a tag for their collar, are they required to show like vaccination stuff for the dog and all that other kind of stuff? Is that part of that application?
Correct.
Okay. All right. I thought so. I just double checking. All right.
Supervisor Stock?
So I'll jump off of, because these are going to be my comments as well. I tried. Usually I do the annual dog park tag, but after you and I talked at the budget meeting, I personally, like this past year, I really haven't been to the dog park like at all. But I took my dog there and I scanned the QR code and went to do the payment online just for the day pass. And problem I ran into, and this may be why we didn't see as many these processes we kind of had anticipated when we first opened it, is the application, like what Supervisor Thomas asked for, does require the tag numbers and all that kind of stuff. Kind of cumbersome process. And I didn't even know his rabies tag. He has the shot, my dog, but I didn't even know the number. I just put in some dummy numbers just to get past it, just so I can get it. So I'm wondering if we can find a happy medium in there, because when we're asking for cash or in the paper applications, you can't require that information. We're just going to accept the money. So in the same token, when we're doing these online applications, I think we're putting up a couple too many barriers to where people that want to pay aren't able to, because they get hung up on, well, I don't know their number. Yeah, I have it, but I don't know the number. Maybe just turn it into, you know, by using this dog park, you are agreeing that you have the requirements, the rabies shot, the dog license, whatever that is, and then it's back on the dog owner. Mm-hmm. And because no person with their juggling dog is coming into dog park is going to be able to type out all those numbers on their phone. So I think, because I was a little confused too when we looked over the numbers, like, geez, there seemed to be a drop from previous years. I know COVID sparked an increase in people using the dog parks and the parks in general, but just trying to figure out for myself kind of why we saw a drop. I think that might be something. I don't know if you guys can track scans versus people that actually go through with the form. I don't know if that's a metric that you can track, but
I think
my experience...
What's that?
We could track between the paper and...
No, like, track versus how many people, like, clicked the form versus actually completed the form.
Oh,
looked at it and then, like, abandoned it, type, like an abandoned cart thing. I don't know if that's there or not, but I would suggest... I would suggest maybe changing the forms to making the patron say, yes, I'm attesting that I have all these things. Because there's no way that we're going to verify that anyway. We have the rules stated. It's an honor system. And I think that was kind of like a barrier where, yes, it's easy to pay online, but at the same time, like I said, I just put in dummy numbers just to get past the field so I could complete the transaction because I didn't have a number in front of me. I had it. I just didn't know it. I didn't have it memorized. So.
Yeah, we'll look into that. I know that that's more of like a call, a global process with the rabies and vaccination that's probably been through the years, but now that you're right, it's an online portal. I mean, every time you agree upon something on your phone, you scroll really quick, hit the I agree, and you move on, right? So
we don't
have to be away.
We're not verifying the cash anyway. So it's like when somebody drops cash in the box, they're just putting the cash in the box and moving on.
We get empty ones all the time.
So. What's that?
I said we get empty ones all the time. Oh, a little note, thank you, your park is beautiful.
There's no way it says we take compliments.
It's the best.
We feel warm and fuzzy.
Put a wood post to the camera out there and then, you know.
I mean,
you can do a fake camera.
Not saying
you
have to connect it.
Yeah.
No, but well, you bring up a good point. We want to make sure it's still user friendly for using that, especially online version. So
yep.
Thank you for letting us know.
Yeah.
Any other motion?
Yeah. Any other
second?
Any other discussion? Second? John?
Yeah, that's second.
Okay. No more discussion. All right. Mr. Governor, how do you vote on the fees for 2024? Okay. The rest of the committee, any vote?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. These are good.
I do have a question, though, on there. If there's a fireplace at the shelter, what are the rules on using that?
A fireplace for, I'm sorry.
Yeah, in some of the shelters, there's a fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the rules if you want to use the fireplace?
Bring your own wood.
Bring your own wood.
I mean, do you have to...
Bring your own fire.
Obviously, you have to put it out.
Yeah.
Do you have to clean it out as
we
well?
We clean it out.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right, so next on the docket, resolution authorizing Director of Parks to apply for a grant funding from the DOT, which will be used for completing phase one design and construction of the Midwest Interstate Trail. We went a little bit out of line. We actually had this in front of Finance Committee previously, just based on schedules. This resolution in front of you has to be submitted to the DOT before the end of the year, and not knowing with the holidays if we have another Public Works Committee, we just wanted to make sure we put it in front of the committees and the board prior to the end of the year. To summarize, a lot of committee members have been reported on our Midwest Interstate Trail. This is a 4-mile stretch within the village of Twin Lakes, Randall on the western side of Kenosha County. That's in conjunction with Theo and Santa Gravel utilizing their property to put in an off-road multi-use path that connects to northern Illinois, McHenry County. So with this proposal, we already have adopted and approved the feasibility study through the DOT. And this would be the next transition to actually start through, if DOT approves this grant, to start design and construction for the first phase of a 3-phase expansion of that 4-mile trail. So this resolution is necessary for the DOT in order for us to formally submit our grant application. The total grant amount requested is 1.3 and some change million. And which Kenosha County would be responsible for 20% match, which is $276,849. That would come out of parkland development. So there is a budget mod attached to this in order to account for those funding sources if we are approved for that grant.
Any questions? Supervisor Thomas?
So, this isn't within a park, so how can we use the parkland development fund for the $276,000?
I would deem this as recreation purposes.
Okay, but it's not in a park, though.
I don't know if there's anything that would constitute that we could use it for those.
Do we have a copy of that?
Of
What the Parkland Development Fund is can be used for?
The budget resolution language was that it's a fund for to offset parks capital projects.
Right. So I don't think this falls within the preview. Do we have to say in the grant how it's going to be funded?
No, but it does ask for the 20%, so we wanted to account for it on the front end.
Well, I don't see how we can, unless we amend the resolution to exclude that, and we just leave it unspecified. But I don't think this has anything to do with the park. I mean, lots of things have to do with recreation. I don't think it has anything to do with the park.
Supervisor Stock?
Are our bike trails, that kind of stuff, are those cared for by the Parks Department or is he?
Correct.
So it's under your jurisdiction, more or less, maintaining the bike trails and all that kind of stuff? In Kenosha County.
Even with the highway expansion projects that deal with off-road as part of the project, we take ownership over the maintenance of those afterwards. So yes.
Okay, thank you.
But on county roads,
trail on Highway C at the bridge that went over at East, is that under Parks?
Yes.
Parkland Development? So it's not?
It was not under Park. That was Highway C was a highway
that
project,
highway
but
C.
It's
okay.
A park facility now.
It's a park facility now.
Yes, okay. It's under our jurisdiction.
But the development wasn't. Same thing with County Road S. That was all the highway that paid for all that.
And
the same thing with S. It had nothing to do with the Parks Department.
This is a partnership with DOT and Rail, yeah. So it goes outside of a highway project. Right. So that's why you're seeing under Parks Division
right.
Instead of highways.
Right. Yeah.
And if it was under a highway, we wouldn't have Parkland Development money to pay for it. We would have to fund it differently?
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead, Supervisor Carr.
Is there a way that we can just get clarity on that on the Parkland Development Fund? If it's determined that the funds can't be used for that, then
We don't even have to decide. We can approve this and amend the motion.
Supervisor Carr has a point on your right.
I'm just saying, what would happen if we did all of a sudden it was determined that we couldn't use the Parkland funds for this?
It would have to come back to the board with an adjusted budget modification, or have to turn down the funds if the county board found that they did not want to support those funds through capital on an annual budget or a budget mod using other funds.
Yeah. No, I think it's definitely a worthy project. I think this is probably more of a technicality of, hey, it's a good idea, we can get the money from here, everything makes sense. I'm on board with all that. I'm just trying to figure out what happens if it's a fail-safe. Well, then it has to come back to us, and we have to make another decision is what it sounds like.
We could check with legal counsel and finance.
I'll reach out to Barn and Patty. They're the ones that write up a lot of the budget resolution language.
Yeah.
And get clarity on if we can use it, and if we can't, what are the repercussions or where to find the other funds. I think it falls just because it's in the park and recreational capital plan. That's kind of like the gray area, I guess you could call it, but I would need clarity on it.
Supervisor Thompson.
Yeah, I guess this is, I've got a greater concern in some of how this parkland development money is being used. We're going to take $500,000 out of it to put rock and change the grade on, I don't know, half mile of the Pike River with impets. Honestly, it doesn't improve the park at all. People have been enjoying it for 100 years, and there's been dirt that erodes in and ends up going downstream. It's just a reality, right? It happens everywhere. We're not going to stop that. It's going to continue to happen. Here we want to take another more than $250,000 after we just took $500,000 for the Pike River capital project. And honestly, it doesn't really benefit anybody. And here we are spending $250,000, and honestly, it's not for parkland development. It's an exploration of putting a bike path on someone else's property that they're donating. I don't even know if they're donating it, leasing it to us for a dollar. I don't know exactly what that agreement is with Thielen. And it's just like this is turning into a slush fund for projects that don't really improve the parks. And I don't think that was ever the intended purpose of you know, getting the 15% from the beer garden and waste management kicking in $75,000 a year and getting money from the ropes course. And, you know, I don't know how much we're going to get from the proposed beer garden at Settlers Park or the money we're going to get from the beer garden that's going to be out at Silver Lake Park. You know, but if all of it's just going to go for capital projects that don't really benefit the people using the park, because what we do in those cases, then we borrow the money for playground equipment, and when we should be using this money here to take it off the tax levy, or maybe spending it to pay the utilities at Kemper Center, or, you know, whatever we can do there, because God knows we spend $500,000 a year in debt payment and paying for utilities and maintenance and everything else. I just think it's a waste of money when we have all these other things that are on the tax levy that we shouldn't be paying for. And, you know, I would rather have it undesignated on how that 20% is going to get paid for. But it's just irritating every time I see something with Parkland Development Fund and I don't see any improvements happening in the park. It's just, it's a slush fund.
That we use parkland development funds to do off-highway trails in the past, or fund? Have we used the funds in this way before?
I would have to check back before my time, but Kemper Center, I know we have done the multi-use path along Kemper Center's lakefront over there. I haven't seen if any funds were offset with that one. I know we received a small grant, but nothing comes to my knowledge as far as off-road is typically through the highway with those, unless we do it within the park itself. So this would be more unique, but again, we're tying it in. Now I keep on saying that we're tying it in connections first to our county parks with this type of thing and the Ice House Trail. So it is for more direct park use and park connectivity with this park.
Yeah, this trail will lead people in a sense to
correct. That's the ultimate end game. It terminates.
Study is going to see if that's possible.
Right. Using County Highway F on that more northern section of the multi-phase approach would connect to our existing off-road multi-use path network.
And then the second question, did the Pike River restoration phases that we've completed up to this point, was part of those projects not improving the trails going through Pets as far as when we're restoring the Pike River, we're not also doing the trails and improving the paths and stuff?
Hiking trails, off-road.
Putting in the gravel and...
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, those were part of them.
That's all.
Okay, can I get a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Supervisor Stein.
Second.
Supervisor Carroll. One of the things I wanted to bring up, I'll disagree with Supervisor Thompson at one point, and that is this will be used. It'll be used by the Western Kenosha County residents who have nothing like this out there. There is nothing out there unless you take your car, drive down to Silver Lake Park. This one you'll be able to get on various routes. And what, there's around some of the subdivisions, it's going to be around a lot of the subdivisions. So that there will be use for it out there. It will be used for the people in the city of Kenosha. No, absolutely not. So we do have nothing out in the western part of the county that has anything like this. So I'll respectfully disagree. Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying it. No, I'm not saying people won't use it.
There's no use for it.
Oh, no, I didn't say that. I just said I don't think the money should come out of the Parkland Development Fund.
Yeah. Okay.
That's all.
I understand.
No, I think people will use it for sure.
Okay. Any other discussion? All right, so no other discussion. Youth and Governance.
Aye.
Okay, all those on committee for this vote, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against or?
Nay.
One nay, okay.
All right, we will move on to the third item, being a resolution authorizing the transfer of remnant of County Highway F to Donna Carroll, pursuant of the first rate refusal, the amount of $5,000. So this resolution was drafted by our legal counsel, and since I've been taking the main torch of these remnant parcels, I figured I'd just put it under our the Parks Division agenda in order to have authorization through the county board and this committee to formally take action on the sale of parcel A. It was in your packet. So it's on the upper portion of your handout. You can't see it too well, so I have another printout. It's not very clear. It's one of our smaller parcels that was splitting an existing pond between a private residence down at Caro and Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park. So for those that couldn't see, I do have another attachment, physical hard copy if needed. But this formally gives our legal counsel approval to take necessary next steps and take that off of the county properties and give that over to private ownership per our previous resolutions that we've been speaking of for several years now.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Day, second by Supervisor Stock. Okay. Any discussion? Supervisor Carroll.
I'm just going to let you know that I'm going to abstain from voting on this as the property owner is my mother.
That's a good idea.
Okay. Discussion at all?
For your question.
All right. So no more questions or discussion. We'll go with youth and governance again. How do you vote?
Aye.
Okay. Rest of the committee, you vote?
Aye.
Abstention by Supervisor Carroll.
Okay, so division reports. I'll try to make this quick as far as changes, just a couple small items. Brightdale Forest Main, we did get bids back. They were favorable. We just awarded the purchase order to the Wanset Group in the amount of $124,440. So we're within budget, and once they are able to secure the necessary materials, we anticipate moving that one forward and getting that done. They feel confident getting it completed well before our Little League season starts and Pavilion Up this season.
I'm sorry, what was the project coming in?
The $144,440. There is two bids. The other amount from AW Oaks was $224,000 flat.
Okay, so two bids that came in. And that was for the Brightdale Forest Main?
Correct.
But the budget was at 431?
Correct.
144?
Yes. We talked to our consultant. We were very surprised at how favorable this was. So, again, their point is that these types of projects swing pretty dramatically. You can even see between the 144 and the 144.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, they try to, of course, give us a budget prediction conservatively so we can be successful, but it just shows that things are just very, very much in the air with where the budget was to land or business come back.
Okay.
So we'll be well within our budget.
Really?
Well. So Kemper Center, Anderson Art Center business plan, just another update that we have another scheduled meeting internally to review the status of those things. So hopefully get some more information from our consultant. That meeting will be on December 4th, so coming up next week. So hopefully more information by the new year, if anything, will be more robust by that time. Midwest Interstate Trail, we do have the SOQs came back for the feasibility study. We have two proposals that came back. We'll be evaluating those currently. Old Settlers Park, we actually had an internal meeting with the two top finalists for the proposed beer garden. So that just happened today. So we will internally reconvene and see what our next steps will be shortly with that one. Other than that, this Friday is our first county Christmas tree lighting ceremony. So an invite got sent out to the board through the county exec's office. So we hope to see everyone there. It looks like rain's going to cooperate and the weather's going to get warmer. So let's cross our fingers. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Does anybody have any questions?
Just one question. So as part of this Kemper business plan, I would imagine they're getting towards some last portion of it on what they're going to make a recommendation. Does it include Kemper Center Inc. as part of that building still?
With I don't want to give anything without giving a full story, if that makes sense to you, because I think it would undermine the whole purpose of why we took so long to go through that study. And saying anything that would be more finite in a short answer, I think, would not do it justice in a public forum. So I'd rather wait and anticipate till the full study comes out to answer that question. That makes sense?
That's fine. The only reason I'm saying that, because their lease comes up.
Correct.
Then I would think that we should have fair warning.
Yes, and that's why we're doing the study now.
So do you have a tentative date when that's going to be given to the county?
Yeah, the 2027 is when the lease expires, and we anticipate finishing up this business study by January of this coming year. So
we'll have it no later than 1/31/24.
That's the anticipated.
Yeah. Time. Okay. All right. Yeah. I can be patient for 2 months.
Okay. So we're getting there.
No, that's what I was driving at. Yeah. You know. So okay. All right. Thanks.
Any
other questions for Matt? Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Shelley.
I do have a couple things. Everyone should have got an invite for November 30th. We're going to hold a County Board Supervisors open house in our highway department. So please come. It's going to be an early morning, 6 to 8, but hoping you can meet most of our highway individuals and they can get on with their day. So please come, donuts and coffee. We are still awaiting the Army Corps' 60% submittal for the river restoration project. We are waiting for a new date, but we have not received that yet, so I will let you know when that comes. Chairman Nordegan and I have talked about the mural, the courthouse mural. Frank was on vacation last week, but he's going to be putting together some before and after photos that we can send to you, but it's also fully restored, so if you're in the courthouse, please visit. It's above the ceremonial courtroom, so please stop by. And then the last item I had is the December meeting. Right now, we don't think we have anything on the docket, but if we do have something coming up, if there's a date that we want.
That's currently scheduled for Christmas Day. I'm not going to be here.
Yes,
so unless something comes out of somewhere that we're not knowledgeable on, I don't know if we need to meet, but if there's a date that, you know, it's going to be available to all, I think we should try to nail that down now, and then if we do have to meet, we've got the date picked out. I know for Supervisor Carroll, he's gone a lot. But, you know, that leaves the 4th, 11th, or the 18th. And I don't think it'll be the 4th, because we're just meeting today. It'll probably be the 18th, I guess, would be the most logical.
18th is the only one that'd work for me.
Yeah.
I am out of town.
John?
What's the date?
18th.
Oh, it's what?
December. If we need to. If we need to.
Not particularly. Okay. Yeah. If you need it, I don't know.
No.
If we can do the 25th, can we come whenever
you come? Coming on the 26th. unless there's a different day of the week. But at this point, I would say we try to move everything out to January, if at all possible. Something has to come up. I can't imagine anything now. Pretty much took care of the business we needed to take care of to try to get into the days we need to get into. Okay? Anything else, Shelley? Right now, we won't worry about scheduling. Okay. Any other businesses appropriately brought up?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion to adjourn. I guess that's appropriate. Second. Who's second? Oh, Supervisor. I guess we can all vote this at one time. Motion to adjourn.
Aye.
Okay.